Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is the Writer's Lounge, show number 81. This is April 13th, 2015, and I am Tom Riedel, and this, of course, is a show where we showcase new authors. And along with me tonight, as a guest co-host, is Bobby Hughes-Millman. She'll be on briefly to talk to you. And a brief intro to today's show, we're bringing back an author we had on a couple other times, and her name is Dawn Copen Whidden, and she wrote the book Stolen. So she will be on with us at about 15 minutes after the hour, wherever you are. The Writer's Lounge blog can be found over at tomriedel.com/blog. And over there, of course, you can read all the reviews of all the books that I've read over the last 2.5-3 years. And in the upper left-hand corner of that page, you can find the Blog Talk Radio player, and you can click on your favorite author and listen to the interview here on the Writer's Lounge. Of course, we're on Facebook. You go over to the Blog Talk Radio site, click on Facebook, go over there, like us, and you can also follow us on Twitter. Of course, you can do it the old-fashioned way, too, to contact us here at the Writer's Lounge at twl11@yahoo.com. And upcoming guest authors on next week, James McAllister, who wrote The Turret. I think you're really going to like it. If you like sci-fi, it's right up your alley. It's a great book, and so stay tuned for that. And what else do we have here? We have to talk to you about our sponsor. And the sponsor of today's show is Magic Pen Web Design, and it offers its clients a simple, effective, and affordable approach to website design development. Go on over there to MagicPenWebDesign.com and fill out the estimate form and let Magic Pen help you sell that next book with a website design that works its magic for you. And if you'd like to call and talk to Dawn, myself, or Bobby today, you can give us a call toll-free at 877-878-1436 or 626-213-5613. And right now, I'd like to introduce my guest co-host, Bobby Hughes-Millman. She's been on the show before with a book, and now she's in a different role. So we welcome her to the Writer's Lounge. And Bobby, how you doing?
Hi, Tom. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. And I thought we'd start off for our listeners out there that are listening to the show. I'm sure there are thousands of them, Bobby, but I would like you to tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do and what you have to contribute to the writer's world here on the Writer's Lounge.
Okay. Well, I guess it all started a few years back. I am a Marine Corps vet, and a few years after getting out of the Marine Corps, I thought, wow, you know, there are so many things that I've wanted to do, but I never did because I thought I just, I don't have the ability to do it. And then I thought about what I did in the Marine Corps and the things that I accomplished there and the things I was able to do at boot camp alone. And I thought, if I can do that, I can do anything. And so I went back to college and I got a degree, a bachelor's degree in philosophy with pre-law emphasis. I started working for the Screen Actors Guild, and while I was there, I started writing. And toward the end of my time at the Screen Actors Guild, I wrote a book in about a month. I sent it to my friend, Robert E. Weimer, who he used to direct a lot of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and Next Generation episodes, and I sent this to him and said, "What do you think?" And he said, "I love it. I'd love to turn it into a television series." But a friend of mine at Warner Brothers said, "You know, you really have a lot better chance of getting something done with it if you try and get it published." So I spent years after that just working on making the story, building the story, developing it, and then it became Darkest Frost, which was my first book I ever wrote. And I feel that with each time I rewrote and each edit I made and each new short story I wrote or each new thing I wrote, it just improved my writing and allowed me to learn more and more about writing and understanding the process that every writer goes through, which leads me to where I am today. So I have written so far 8 books. Only 2 of them have been published,
wow.
And that's Darkest Frost and Crimson Tears, which you've read both from the Black Casket Legacy. And then I've written, I have 2 others in that series that I'm in edits and rewrites on. I have some others that are more literary, others that are swimming around in my mind, but currently I have one called Shadow Killer that I'm getting a lot of interest in, and I'm trying to do final edits and rewrites at this point and getting ready to get that one out there to get it published.
Very good. And I bet you've got a lot swimming around in that head of yours with 8 books. I didn't even realize that. That's amazing for you to sit down and write all those books with all those thoughts and all those interesting subject matters in your book. But tell us a little bit about the ones that are out there that don't know a lot about it, myself included. What exactly is the Screen Actors Guild?
Oh, the Screen Actors Guild. The Screen Actors Guild is what it sounds like. It's the union for actors. It started in the 30s with a lot of the old well-known stars like Ginger Rogers and oh my goodness, I'm trying to think of all the names. I can't even think of all of the old actors who were the founding members of the Screen Actors Guild. At the time, there were a lot of things happening with actors. They were working long hours, getting very little rest, and there were some things that were happening where they were trading actors and actresses between the studios, and it was creating a lot of work that wasn't being the actor wasn't receiving money for, and so they wanted to develop a union that would protect them from over abuse. And throughout the years, even through the time when I was with Screen Actors Guild, a lot of the rules surrounding children on the set and stunt performers and different things that control how a performer works and how they're treated on the set. Those were all developed by the Screen Actors Guild. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I was just going to say that's very interesting.
Yes. And I was staff leadership. I was an executive director for them. And staff leadership for a union, they are not members of the union. They work for the membership. So oftentimes I had to go on a set because members were working 22, 23 hours a day and not being paid the time that was required for it. We had some well-known stars harmed on the set because of something happening. So I've had to go and do investigations into that. Any abusive actors, or just going to say hello, let them know that we were there. And typically, if there was a representative of the union in the area, they were always even more conscientious of how they treated the membership. And one of the things I found was that the actors who were more of the day players or the extras, they were the ones who needed our help more often than the stars. Although I had had from time to time a star come to me when I was on the set and say, you know, tonight's our last night and I haven't been paid half of what I'm owed, and that was supposed to have been paid to me a month ago. Mm-hmm. So I was able to talk with producers and say, look, you know, I could shut this down if I have to. So let's get this guy paid. And then they would, because it costs tens of thousands of dollars to shut down a production for a day.
Wow.
So, and that's something they definitely don't want to have happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very interesting life. And Bobby, you're going to be on with us for a while. I guess Robin is going to take a bit of a break from the show. So mm-hmm. we're going to have you around for a bit. And it's going to be interesting talking to you as we go forward here, especially about that, that Hollywood connection that you have, I think is very, very interesting. And we will pursue that on another show, I'm sure, and talk a little bit more. But I wanted to tell you a little bit about my week and what I've been going through here. Well, and I'm sure a lot of people out there be glad to know and excited to know, if they don't already, that the Association of Writers and Writing Programs is a group of people, mostly writers, who cater to that genre of writing. And they converged on our building where I work, the Minneapolis Convention Center, over the last 4 days, and there was like over 12,000 people swarming through that building. And when I say swarming, they were. It was an incredible amount of people coming through, and it left me thinking about writers in general. Because when you get that type of people in one place, you're able to look at the behaviors on a whole. You see everybody at the same time. And you watch their faces, and you watch their mannerisms, and you see their clothing and how they react. Well, I can tell you that in the 13 years that I worked at the Minneapolis Convention Center, I have not seen as many lost and found items come through our window as did with the AWP conference. So what that would make me wonder, what I've been wondering about is, what is it about writers that they kind of lose track of their belongings? I don't know what that is, but I find it really interesting. And I guess the word eccentric comes into play here, because that's the word that I would probably use to describe most of the people that were there. Not that that's a bad word. I just kind of wondered, though, sometimes what's going on in people's heads. And writers are certainly a group of people that are very interesting to either talk to and or just be around, because they're so full of life, so much so that sometimes they lose track of what's in their hand. Even a cell phone. We've had cell phones missing. We had umbrellas gone, coats. We had scarves. We had everything you can imagine come in through our window there at the convention center. So that's what I've been doing. I've been watching the writers in our building, and I hope that someday, probably next year, I can maybe attend an AWP conference, because I'm going to be one of those people someday, and I'd like to hook up with them, and hopefully they'll accept me. But that was fun. Let me tell you, that was a lot of fun.
I bet. You know, I can imagine what is going through their minds while they're walking around being a writer. Because I know when you're in the moment, like when you're thinking about the book, you know this, when you're writing a book, Tom, and you're thinking about what you're about to write, what else is on your mind?
Yes.
Nothing else. You're thinking, you're in that moment, and you're thinking about the story. But when you're at the conference, it's the same thing. You start falling into that whole idea of where you are, the magic of all of it, and everything you're seeing that has to do with your passion. And everything else just disappears. How often are you writing and you don't even notice the sounds of the world around you, Tom?
Yes, that's exactly it. So enough of me, enough of you. Not that we don't want more of you, and we will in the future and future shows here on the Writer's Lounge, but we're going to bring now onto the show Dawn Copeland Whidden, and she wrote Stolen, which was written by Dawn Copeland Whidden and published by Amazon Digital Services in 2014. And you may purchase it, of course, over at Amazon.com/Kindle, and you can visit the author on Facebook. This is what Amazon had to say about Stolen. Another homicide has rocked a small town of Fallsburg, New York. In a cabin nestled deep in the woods, two male victims are discovered, both gunshot victims. One is deceased, the other one is barely alive. But it is not the murder itself that has detectives Jean Whitley and her new partner Marty Keel frantic to find out the answers of what occurred in that cabin, but it is the identities of the two small children also found at the scene. One child is quickly identified, but the other, a young boy, remains a mystery. The only one with possible answers lies with the man who lay critically wounded and unconscious in the hospital, because the unidentified boy either cannot or will not speak to tell the investigators who he is and what happened in that cabin that left one man dead, another barely hanging on. And here's what I had to say about Stolen. The author has written three books in the series, A Child is Torn, Faceless, A Mystery, and Stolen. I have read and reviewed all three. I loved the first one, liked the second one, and was anticipating the third one to be another good, interesting read. Stolen wasn't good. It was far above good as you can get. It was easily exceeded all my expectations. The author brings back all the main characters that we came to know in the first two books. All the characters are so rich with personality that you can't help but like them, and it's easy to relate to their struggles. The ingredient that makes the chemistry of the story so strong is the ability of the author to mix fear and compassion into the character of a child. These are such competing emotions to have when trying to help a child, but as a caring adult, you feel strongly compelled to help in some way. In Stolen, for example, you will be introduced to Tristan. His behavior can be described as part wolf and part human, but he is just a strange and troubled little boy who desperately needs help. Aside from having very interesting characters, the story also has a few twists and turns in it that will awe you and keep your eyes glued to the page. I could not put this one down. The story flows easily. It's very rare for me to finish a book in one day. With this one, I couldn't call it a day until I finished it. It goes to the way to the very top of the bookshelf for this year. And with that, I would like to bring on again my good friend, Dawn Whidden. How you doing, Dawn?
Oh, I'm good. How are you, Tom?
I'm doing great. And say hello to Bobby. I guess this is where you two meet.
Yes.
Hi,
Bobby. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. And welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Glad to be here with Tom. I have to say that this book really sounded intriguing. I am dying to read this ever since I read Tom's review. And he's talked to me about it and told me how much he loves it. I'm so excited for you.
Thank you. Well, I'm proud of this one. I'm proud of them all, but this one, for some reason, it needs a lot of work still editing, but as far as the storyline goes, I think that it was one of the best ones I've done.
Don't you find that as a writer, we feel like we're never really ready to finish editing?
Well, unfortunately, I didn't have very much editing on this one. The first two books were published, and I wasn't happy with the way they were edited, so I said, well, I might as well do it on my own this time. I did hire an editor, but she was new. She's really great. But as the book is out there and the reviews are coming in, I'm getting a lot of complaints about grammar, or I've noticed some names are in the wrong place. And unfortunately, when you're writing the book, no matter how many times you read it yourself, you just can't get them all. So yeah. I have to depend on the reader a lot of times.
Of course.
Yep. Yeah, that's important, I think, to remember that we do, as we were just talking about the AWP conference, we get so entwined in our story that sometimes we fail and we miss the important aspects of the writing, which would be the where the editor would come in. So good luck to you on that, Dawn, and could you read an excerpt from your book?
Sure. You ready?
Sure.
Okay. All right. The first of the 911 calls came in at 8:14 a.m. A small group of hunters witnessed a small child running and screaming through the woods. The caller told the dispatcher that it appeared that the boy was shirtless and possibly shoeless, and he was concerned because the child seemed to be alone and frightened. He explained to the operator that they had tried to intercept and detain him, but the boy was too fast and disappeared into the darkness of the woods. The second of the 911 calls came in a minute later at 8:15 a.m. The call was from a young couple hiking through the woods. They reported seeing what appeared to be a half-dressed child running from a cabin not far from the path that they were on. They told the dispatcher they noticed the boy just moments after hearing what they thought to be gunshots. Normally, the gunshots wouldn't have caused any concern, this being hunting season, but being gun owners themselves, they determined at least two of the shots were fired from a handgun, not a hunting rifle or a shotgun. After a short discussion of what they should do, they decided to call 911 and report the incident. The third of the 911 calls came in at 8:17 a.m., 1 minute after the first car was dispatched towards the vicinity. The first group of hunters, in an effort to find the boy, came across a cabin that the second call had mentioned. It was there the hunters came across the two bodies. One male, approximately 25 years of age, the caller told the 911 operator, was laying just inside the cabin with multiple gunshot wounds, one to the stomach and one to his chest. The caller confirmed the victim was still alive, but barely. The second victim was also male, but definitely older. His body was further inside the cabin, and the caller told the 911 operator, "There's no question, he's deceased." "Are you sure, sir? Is it possible you're mistaken?" the dispatcher asked the man. "Damn sure," the hunter answered. "I'm a physician. He's definitely deceased." By the time the fourth 911 call came in, the first officer who was dispatched to the scene arrived on what he thought was a possible domestic abuse call. It was what everyone found in the cabin next that turned the whole case into a lot more than just a possible domestic homicide. And that was my prologue.
Well, that's good. Your books focus a lot on the troubled youth of our society, and in this one you feature Tristan. What and why have you been inspired in this regard? What caused you to focus on children in your books, Dawn?
I don't know. It's just I've always been fascinated with the human mind and the emotional problems that a child can get as he's growing older, whether it be environmental or genetically, and why some children in one family have problems where another one wouldn't. My first dream career as I got older was to be a child psychologist, and then I decided I don't think I can handle it. It's more fun writing about it than dealing with it in reality, I guess.
Right. Bobby, you have anything?
Well, you know, I totally understand. Before I went to college, one of the things I considered doing was being a psychologist and possibly a child psychologist. I'm totally with you, Dawn. That's a difficult thing to do. But having that thought sure helps you to be able to get into someone's mind when you're writing something like this, don't you find?
Well, yeah, because I have always really been interested in the psyche, what makes human beings and, you know, why they grow up to be who they are. And so children are fascinating creatures to watch because they're so honest.
Right.
It's like going to
Absolutely.
The zoo, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And we know when we sit down and we start to write, it's a lot of fun, but it can be very frustrating, too. What's the most frustrating aspect of the process for you, along with being fun?
I think reading it over and over and over again, trying to you know, keep everything. The timeline to me has always been a problem, making sure that everything is in the right place and it's moving along smoothly. And in order to do that, I mean, let's face it, you cannot sit down and write 24/7. Sometimes a week or two will go by, and then you go, well, where am I in the story and what happened in the story? So you got to read it, and you're reading it over and over again to the point where you're ready to just take the story and throw it out the window and say, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. Unfortunately, it happens, and I think at that point that's where I'm at now. I've got 5 chapters into the new book, and I'm saying, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. Maybe I'm not made to be an author. Maybe I'm just a storyteller, and that's what I really wanted to do,
I would not give up there, kid, because you've done some great stuff. And, yes, this book has shined. The other books were good, but this one was really good, so... Somewhere along the way there, you're going to hit another niche and another spurt, and you're going to get down into it and write some more good stuff, I'm sure of it. It's just, I think we all hit a roadblock, we all hit the writer's block, and we all get kind of worn down by the process sometimes, and you had mentioned. But I think that taking time away from a story is a good thing. I know that everybody says you have to write. In fact, at the conference, I heard that a lot. Don't stop. Just write every day. But sometimes you can't do that. So would you agree with that, Bobby?
I absolutely agree with that. You know, and I've been where you are with my books, and especially after you get so many rejections when you're sending it out, or you have you find out that, like you have, that there are mistakes after it's published. That can be very frustrating. I have a friend right now who's finishing up a book, and she's really frustrated, and my advice to her was, you have to walk away for a little bit. Sometimes just set it down and walk away. But every day I would, even though I set Darkest Frost aside, every day I sat down and I would write one short story a day. Just the first thing that was on my mind, and the thing that made me just desire the writing process. And that's where you really get some of your inspiration. And some of those short stories ended up turning into either a novel themselves, or I've had people say, oh, you have to write this into a novel. And so that's where a lot of great inspiration can come. So don't stop writing, but step away from the book for a while, because it can make you crazy if you don't.
Yeah, plus the marketing is no fun either. If you don't market, it's not going to get out there, and I think that's my worst, the thing I hate the most is the marketing, because nobody helps you, really. You're on your own.
Yeah.
Right.
Don, when you sit down and write any book, Stolen or any of the other two that you've written, what do you think is the most important element of writing as far as grabbing the reader? What's the thing in your stories? I know we're dealing with twists and turns in the plot. We're also dealing with character development. But what is that one thing you think is the most important?
I think it's the character development. I think if you don't fall in love with the characters, and from the very beginning, if you don't make them real to the reader, you're going to lose them from the beginning. At least,
how do you do that?
I don't know. I'm not going to lie. All I know is that it comes right. While I'm typing, I'm feeling what they're saying. I'm feeling their emotion, but I don't know how it's happening. I have no clue. It just develops as I'm typing it. People say, you know, I've got problems with my hands. People say, well, then just dictate it. I can't do that. Whatever's going on, it's coming through my hands, through the keypad. It's not coming through my mouth. I cannot dictate a story. So I better keep my hands working if I'm going to continue to write, because for some reason I just can't dictate it.
As I wrote in my review, the one thing that I think really grabbed me and grabbed me with all of your books is the way that you portray the children in your stories. And it's not just, everybody loves a child. Everybody wants to help a child. But there's an element of fear there. And you can't go away, you can't get away from it. It sort of pulls at you and pulls you in. But at the same time, there's that loving, caring, nurturing element to every human being that's also there. And I think that's what makes your stories so compelling and so I can't put it down kind of reading material. That's what it was for me. And as I said, I finished it in one day. So
wow.
I think going further into your writing career, if you want to call it that, keep that in mind, because I think there's a niche there that you have that not too many people have as far as introducing characters in a story. You do it with such good emotion, and yes, you do you do get us to like them too.
Yeah, even the ones you don't like, there's something about them that every once in a while I'll throw in a character who is really not likable. But everybody has some good in them.
Yes.
And I guess that ambiguous personality makes everybody feel connected. You know, oh, well, you know, he's not all that bad. And you become involved with them. And you don't want to, you love to hate them sometimes, but you like,
yes.
You know, J.R. Ewing, everybody
yes.
hated him, but they loved him.
Right. And the best type of bad guy is the kind that you can find some redeeming quality in them, because everybody has one redeeming quality at least.
Right, and even the good ones have got some bad qualities. I'd like to,
right.
you know, not everybody is perfect, and even my heroines in a lot of cases they're not perfect. They get out of hand. They have emotionals. They have bad days.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're all about.
Mm-hmm. The several characters returned to the pages of your series in Stolen. You brought back many. Who's
mm-hmm.
your favorite?
Mm-hmm.
That's probably cliche. That's asked of a lot of authors on this show. But who's your favorite character? Do you have one?
Well, actually, I do. My favorite character is really the captain, even though he wasn't in this very much because he was hospitalized in the very beginning. So he really didn't have a very big part in this one. But he has a lot of influence on everybody else. And I think even if he's not there, you still feel his influence. And the captain was always that fatherly figure that everybody looks up to, that everybody's,
yes.
well, that's the man I want, you know, to be my daddy type of thing, you know, big,
right.
strong, compassionate. And although he's not in there, you know that his son is reflected in his, you know, the way he taught him and the way he raised him. And yeah, I think the captain is definitely my favorite.
Right, right. Let's talk about the criminal justice system. And that
mm-hmm.
is also in a lot of your books. How much
right.
of your time do you spend in researching interrogation techniques, et cetera?
And well, honestly, the first two books, I didn't do very much research at all. It was all based on what I've seen throughout the years on TV or the news. This last one, I did a little bit more investigating as far as the caliber of a gun, what kind of gun was it, what a detective would say. My old publisher was a ex-cop. The one I'm working on now, if I do finish it, I have been using as a expert to help me, the sheriff in my town. I don't know if you guys heard about it, but several months ago there was a grandfather who lost it and shot 6 of his grandchildren and his daughter to death, the youngest one being 3 mm-hmm. months. And it made national news. And we have a very small town. It's about 400. And the way this man conducted himself, the way the sheriff conducted himself, just fascinated me. And he was so good at what he did and so compassionate about what happened that I know that he is the type of person that I will go to over and over again for help, because he is the Andy Griffith Mayberry RFD type of sheriff with a brain like a big city cop, which is why I would go to him over and over again. Very knowledgeable, really bright. So that's how I do most of my research. Google has helped.
Yep. That helps a lot. Lot of writers these days when we go to Google. Google Maps is also a very good resource, too, if you're looking for a place.
Oh, yeah, right, exactly. And honestly, I did a story, the sheriff, one of the other cops came from Oregon, and I just happened to look up some sort of department from Oregon that dealt with homicide, and I just threw that into it without really knowing that much about it, but enough to make it realistic. Unfortunately, there's always the reader out there who says, well, this is a little bit off base. And my answer is, or like I had one reviewer say, well, Tristan was too small and the cops were too big and the people had too many issues.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you want to review it and give me a bad review, fine. Tell me about the grammar. Tell me about the storyline or the timing. But the size of Tristan is based on my grandson, who is very small. Most cops I've ever met and firemen are large people. They're not 5'4" and 99 pounds. And my attitude is... would you say the Tin Man from The Wizard of Oz isn't realistic and shouldn't be in the book? It's a novel. It's a story.
Yeah.
It's not going to be it's not nonfiction, and that sometimes grabs me. Like, it's a story.
Yeah.
It's make-believe.
Yep, that's exactly it. And, you know, with that comes... the idea that, again, life is so complex and there's so many people in our lives, and then for somebody to come along and say, well, that doesn't sound real or whatever, they could be reading an actual news story and I think they would still make the same comments. Because they don't understand. They don't understand, and they're too critical. And, of course, that brings me to the review, as you just mentioned. What is, in your opinion, what is a good review? What should it contain when they're reviewing, and somebody's reviewing your book?
Basically, if it just struck them emotionally, I guess. But I don't mind somebody giving me a review saying, look, you've got a lot of editing problems. You have a lot of words out of place. I don't mind things like that. A bad review is not exactly the worst thing that can happen. I've learned from them. I really have. The first book I had a bad review saying that it came too quick of an end. So I paid attention to that, and now I don't just end it abruptly. A good review it could be 3 stars, it could be 4 stars, it could be 5 stars. Honestly, I'd rather have a 4-star. I think a 5-star is Tolstoy and the great authors. I don't consider myself a great author, mediocre, but unfortunately, the hardest people, the ones that give the worst reviews I found are authors, other authors,
okay.
Not the readers.
Okay.
Other authors just can rip you a new one.
Sure. Bobby, what's your thoughts on this?
Well, you know, I totally agree about the problem with authors. And I think about that when I'm giving a review also, is to, am I being hard on them because I'm an author, or am I being fair? So I try to make the comments that have to do with the story rather than the little idiosyncrasies I might have as a writer. But getting a good review, I think you're absolutely correct, Dawn. I think that a 3 or a 4-star review, if it's something you can learn from, it's something that is great. And even a 3 or 4-star review doesn't turn people away. It tells them a little bit more about the story. And we're all human as writers.
Right, right.
We all make mistakes.
As a writer, when I find something I don't like, when I read something I don't like, I go directly to the other author and say, look, it's not my type of book. You know, other people might like it, it's just not my type of book. I did find mistakes. To me, that's professional courtesy. You just go to them personally, especially if you can reach them. And like on Goodreads, you obviously can reach the author. But, I find that the hardest thing to deal with is with other authors. I'd rather have a reader say, this book stunk, I didn't like it. Because then I can go to see what they've done and what they've read, and I can say, well, that's not their type of book. That's why they don't like it. I find that hard to believe. The people that love science fiction would even bother to pick up a romantic love story and want to review it. To me, it doesn't make sense. That's like me going to a seafood restaurant, and saying, well, the codfish was terrible. If I don't like it, I'm not going to like it.
Right.
Right.
Why would you pick it up? Yeah.
Yeah, why would you even bother to read it? And I find that to be I think that they do it intentionally sometimes. I might be a little skeptical, but I would say if you're not a reader of that type of genre, why would you read it to review it?
Right. I think we all know when somebody gives somebody a 1-star or 2-star review, and they're sort of slamming the author. I think we realize at that point that the person who's writing just has an agenda, I think that they should review, or they should just discount that review if they're thinking about buying the book. And I think most people are smart enough to know when somebody's talking honestly and being, they're being honest, but they're also being respectful. And I think that's lost in a lot of reviews. But getting back to the characters, as we talked about with Tristan and some of the other characters like Captain, those are characters that will grab you and hold you and want you to read more about them and to learn more about the personalities involved. But which is also important in a book, is the cover of the book. And with your books, they are dramatic in bringing out emotion, and it brings out the curiosity of wanting to turn that cover and open up that book. In Stolen, you have the picture of the bicycle on the cover.
Right,
how did you decide what this cover would look like? What brought you to the bicycle?
Well, the whole story itself, I had the image from the very beginning, either a tricycle out.
Tricycle. I'm sorry.
Yeah, tricycle out in front of an apartment building, or an empty swing, either one. And the girl that did my formatting helped me pick it out. I had found one very, very similar to that, but we couldn't get the right pixels. It just wasn't good enough to do for the cover. It was really, really dramatic, very similar to this, and we found this one, which was really, to me, you're right, it's very dramatic, and I loved it from the very beginning. I didn't have any control over 1 and 2, the first two books, especially 2. I've hated the cover of Faceless from day one, but it was done by a publisher, and no matter how many times I asked them to change it, I lost total control, which is why I went on my own the third time. And I just fell in love with that cover from the beginning. That's what I wanted. That's what I envisioned, and it fit perfectly in the story. And the black and white makes it even more dramatic.
Bobby, what goes through your mind when you're choosing a cover for your book?
Well, I'm kind of funny about these. When I'm choosing a cover, I think about what my book is about, and then I start Googling images. And I have a Pinterest page, and I have what my husband would call a morgue. My husband is an artist, and he has just file cabinets full of papers and pictures that he keeps for future projects he'd like to work on. And I do the same. I keep a morgue of pictures that remind me of what I'm writing and my characters. And so that's how I consider my book cover when I'm ready to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm with you, Tom. I totally agree that her book cover is just it's great, and it brings it when you see the black and white, that tricycle, and then stolen in color. It's just it's beautiful, and it's intriguing, and it's chilling at the same time. And it makes that's the type of cover that would make me pick it up and read the back of it. And then just reading the back of it, then that's a book that I instantly would put in my cart and take with me.
Yeah, and of course, I keep thinking of that image, and it sticks in my mind. And very rarely does a cover do that, but that first book of yours, Dawn, that image sticks in my mind.
Oh, and the little boy sitting there.
Of the little boy with the game controller in his hand with that evil look on his face. That is just awesome, and it's great in the respects that it does cause a reader, or should cause a reader, to pick up the book and buy the book and read it, because it was also very dramatic. Even more so, I think, than the tricycle on the last book. But the book, of course, Stolen, is just fabulous. I can't say it. I've said it so many times now, but it is really good. Dawn, when you're writing those three books,
okay,
from when you started till now, how have you changed as a writer, and how have you changed as a person?
I don't know if I really have changed. I mean, I definitely grew as a writer. Like I said, a few of the reviews that I got from the first one, I took to heart. I made sure that the ending wasn't abrupt in the second one and in the third one. I developed the characters more, and I still do it. I find like it may be I cut them too short. I probably can write a 400-500 page. A lot of times people say, I want more. You're not giving me enough. They're falling in love with the characters, and they want more. It's kind of like a soap opera.
Yes.
Where you learn more and more about them every day. I happen to be a very big fan of J.D. Robb and Patricia Caldwell, James Patterson, where the characters grow over a period of time, just like human beings, you know, the reality, real life. Patricia Caldwell got her niece in this story where she started as a little girl, and now she's an adult. And you watched her grow from the very beginning as a little girl into a grown woman, and you get very invested in that. And you invest in the characters' lives almost like a soap opera. So I think as far as growing as an author, I don't grow as an author. I just watch my characters grow.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And as a person, obviously, you have all
these... I'm just getting old and wrinkled. That's...
But your family life isn't really probably changed at all. But I imagine that a lot of people in your family who have read your books have comments both good and bad, maybe?
Tom. Very few family members read my books. You will find this complaint of most authors.
Okay.
Their family members don't read their books.
Okay.
They can beg and plead, but I do have a few that have, and they love them. But for the most part, the hardest thing to do is get people in your immediate family or people surrounding you to read. I don't know what it is, but it's not just my problem. It seems to be everybody I know that writes has the same problem. They can't get any family members to read their books.
That could be another program, and we could talk about that at length and maybe do some research on that. But I really want to, as we talked about, getting into people's heads, I really want to know why that's happening. I mean, I can understand with a memoir, like I wrote.
Right.
To ignore somebody's fiction,
I don't know if it's ignoring it. My husband's not a very big reader. I mean, he doesn't read, period. I think in the past 20-some-odd years we've been together, he's read 2 books, and he was kind of forced to do that. I don't know. I think maybe they're afraid they would be disappointed, and they wouldn't be able. They're not able to. You know, they say, "Oh well, I didn't like it." How do you say somebody that you care about, "Well, I think your book stinks. It's not. You know, I don't like it." This way, they avoid it. "Oh, I didn't read it. I don't want to read it. I don't want." You know, this
yeah.
They can avoid hurting your feelings.
Bobby, your thoughts.
Well, I think that a lot of the trouble that family members have, and this is something that you and I talked about recently, Tom, is that they think of us as we were when we were young, and they don't think of us as a grown adult or the person who we are or even as maybe somebody separate from their own memories. And so it's hard for them to envision that a person of the memory they have of you is capable of writing something that they would find interesting. And I think it's something that's unfortunate and unfair to authors. But I think that's probably part of the reason that family members have such a blockage. And my mother, I think she had that blockage in the beginning when I first started writing, and I think she didn't expect it to be anything she would be interested in, but she read it anyway because I'm her daughter and she had no choice. But she was really surprised, and so now she tends to read anything that I send to her, and I think I have other family members who have not read anything I've written so far, even knowing that I've had a couple of books published and others that are ready to come out. I think it's just one of those idiosyncrasies of family. Do you think that's possible?
Yeah,
it's possible unless you were a NASCAR driver. I think they'd be there rooting you on.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Or, you know, if you were the manager of a rock group, they'd go, "Oh, wow, yeah." I don't know what it is about writing. I think maybe they feel that they don't want to get into your emotions, and maybe by reading something you wrote, they're kind of being the fly on the wall type of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or they're afraid
or
of
maybe.
They're afraid of the person that they might find there that does not relate at all to the real person that they know.
Right. Or maybe they're afraid they're going to see themselves in the book.
That's it. That's just what I was about to say. Exactly.
Wow.
What was that? The book, The Help? Remember the book, The Help?
Mm-hmm.
Was writing about the town, and they were sitting there. No, this is not me. This couldn't be me. I think that might be a bit of unconsciously they're thinking, "Am I in the book? Is she make me one of the characters?" Because you do take them from real life in a sense.
Yeah.
That's how you base your characters on people that you really know.
That's exactly it.
Yes, and we have just 5 minutes left, Dawn, and time sure does fly when we talk to you. And we wish you much success, obviously, and I will be in touch with you constantly as I am. And I want to thank you for not only being a good writer and supplying me with good reading material, but also I want to thank you for being a friend, because you were there for me when I needed you, or I needed people in my life when I was going through surgery. So I really appreciate your friendship also, and I wanted to get that in there before our time ran out. But
you're welcome.
Any passing thoughts on the writing process to end with our show today, and where can we find you on the internet?
Well, I've got so many websites. I would say the best thing to do is just Facebook me at Dawn Cottman Whidden. That's the best way, and then you can find where I am at all other places, because I've got several different links. But as far as the writing, I just pray that I get my mojo back, because there are people that are really, really so supportive of me and have been begging me to finish this new book. I've got 5 chapters done. I know I have a great idea there. The drive is not there right now. I just can't do it. Maybe I'm just afraid of not being able to do as well as I did with Stolen, because I really do love that story.
Yes. Yes. You keep at it there, dear. And Bobby, any passing words, closing words for Dawn?
Sure. Yeah, I think that everybody goes through that at some point, Dawn. And it's no reflection on you. I think it's just a matter of frustration that everyone feels. I recently read a quote from someone else's book that was talking about how Stephen King was ready to throw Carrie away from all the rejections and the frustrations with it. And his wife pushed him into moving on and to keep going with it. And I think that you should do the same. Just keep moving on and keep going with it, because, Stolen just sounds so beautiful. And it was such a pleasure to meet you. It was a pleasure to talk
thank
to you.
Thank you, Bobby. Same here.
Your insights. Thank you. So keep trudging on. It's such a difficult procedure, but you can do it. You've got such a talent.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you,
Tom.
Okay, take care, and we'll see you again.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye, Dawn.
Yes, another show with Dawn, and I always love having Dawn on the program, Bobby. And so this ends your first guest host of the Writer's Lounge. I hope you enjoyed it, and we will see you back next week, I hope.
Oh, definitely. I will be here.
Yes, and until then.
Thank you for having me on, Tom.
It's great having you here. So until then, we'll see everybody next week on the Writer's Lounge, and let the story begin.
In the middle of the day, your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. But it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. God spoke to Noah one beautiful morn. He said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart.